This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasan with Kusu Chuang and Noel Lim in the studio this morning, greeting you with another week of MCO Life. How are the two of you doing?
Doing great.
So far, so good. Last I checked, everything seems to be functioning perfectly.
So far, so good. So right. 30 seconds into the workday, so far, so good.
So far, so good. Like my friend from Hong Kong would say, so far, so good.
I will take your word on that. We're starting...
Sorry.
It's okay, Chuang. It's okay. I think at this point, we're used to it. So a lot of things have changed. But one thing that has not changed is the fact that the Breakfast Grill is at 8 a.m. every weekday. And today, Lin Mark is taking a look at education. Noel, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it will be a panel. Professor Zaharum Nain, chairman of the Pergerakan Tenaga Academic Malaysia, or GERAK, and also Professor Pradeep Nair, deputy VC of Taylor's University. So, you know, higher education learning has been upended by the MCO. And so how well have universities and colleges adapted to the new normal? So I think Lin will be discussing their state of affairs with this panel of experts.
Yes, this is definitely something to pay attention to, because education, amongst other things, has been severely, as you said, Noel, upended by the movement control order. And we've tried many things. With digital learning is one of them. But obviously, the hamper there is that digital learning can't impact everyone. Not everyone has access to the tools needed. But right now, we're taking a look at the papers. Chuang, what do you have in front of you?
Okay, well, I've been awarded the Edge Weekly. Obviously, I'm looking through some corporate stories. The Star Media Group is interesting because it points out on page, I think, 11, that the management of the beleaguered media company has now turned towards their property portfolio, which I think the last time it was revalued was some number of years ago. According to CGSEIB, they've got about 600 million ringgit worth of land bank over 48 acres or 18 properties. And they've asked for bidders or interested parties to get involved in two in particular, a 220,000 square foot freehold industrial parcel in Bukit Jelutong and a 4-hectare freehold plot in Bentong. So obviously with a share price that has gone from 71 cents to 36 cents, this might be the alternative revenue stream for Star Media Group.
Yes, well, speaking of property, we've actually got a poll running on Twitter right now. Will you buy a property in the foreseeable future? Tell us why. The options you have are yes, only for deals, no, and no, worried about the future. And right now in the lead, 31% saying only for deals. And Chuang, that's the Edge Weekly, right?
Edge Weekly, yes.
Because the FD is no longer around, the Financial Daily.
Yes, it has gone to the great printing presses in the sky. Unfortunately, but at least the Edge Weekly remains.
Yes, but I think you can still find some news stories online.
Correct.
Right?
So they've gone online at this point, and it's you can still find it on the edgemarkets.com. Noel, you've got is that the Malaysian Reserve in front of you. Yes. Well, what does that say now?
Yeah, so I have two newspapers, Harian Metro and Malaysian Reserve. So looking at Malaysian Reserve, the first on the front page, cargo keeps airlines afloat. I'm not sure if you might have seen it on your Facebook feed or even on Instagram. I've seen like pictures of, aircrafts that usually carry passengers, the section that carries passengers. They've put a lot of cargo in there, so there are like cargo sitting on the seats.
Yeah, so, really?
Yeah,
that's
so
kind of cool.
So what has happened is the movement control order has tanked Malaysia Airlines passenger ferrying business, but the cargo division is thriving, rising 60% due to the frantic demand for transport of medical supplies and daily necessities. So I think worldwide we've seen this boost in cargo businesses. It's been the only bright spot for carriers worldwide, as the global passenger ticket revenue has dropped as much as we're talking about like 1 trillion ringgit according to some estimates.
Well, talking about cargo and transport, Malaysia Airports, the new chief executive, chap called Muhammad Saleh, formerly of Post Malaysia and reasonably young in vintage, I think 46 years old. Well, he's now been in the hot seat for the last few weeks, and he's been in the press actually, saying that the airport operator will not be furloughing any of its 11,000 employees because the network is very important, clearly. And that they have been engaging with the government on financial relief measures for airline customers and retail tenants. For example, they want to give airlines a 3-month moratorium on all gazetted aeronautical charges, like aircraft landing and parking fees. And that can be extended to 6 months if necessary. They've also been talking to some of their partners around the world to get some kind of relief. I think they've also got some subsidiaries in Turkey. And they've also got some subsidiaries in, I think, around the world. They're trying to get some kind of relief as well. I'm going to check the papers and come back to you on that.
All right, great. And I think Chuang, he only took the seat in March, is that right? Early March.
Yeah, weeks, I think, not months in job. Yes, he's talking to the Malaysian and Turkish governments to defer payments of revenue share and concession fees and reduce their existing credit lines to help operating cash flow.
Well, like the travel sector, I'm sure airports have a lot of work to do in terms of dealing with this, and he's definitely got his hands full there, just coming into the job especially. Noel, you've also got the Metro. Anything interesting on the Metro?
Yeah, just adding on a Malaysian reserve. So they have a story here on the COVID-19 update. So 400 Malaysians allowed to return from Singapore daily. The government has decided to allow this number per day. I think they estimate that, I guess, you can do enough social distancing, because that causeway is rather busy, right? It's one of the busiest in the world. So before COVID-19. So anyway, Senior Minister Datuk Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob said the entry permits will be issued by the Malaysian High Commission in Singapore for those Malaysians who want to return home. I think, you know, there are Malaysians who work there, maybe on a work permit, and they need to come back and see their children in Johor. And also some of my friends have come back to, I think, to be with their elderly parents, right? So I guess I think, yeah. And then applications are open. And so far, I think they have received 900 applications to date.
Yeah, I think the speaking of applications, there was an application for interstate travel, and I think that in 12 hours they got 300,000 applications.
No way,
for
really?
That. Yeah, the police received 300,000 applications for interstate travel in 12 hours. This is a Bernama story, this is when they said that they were going to allow some amount of interstate travel. But I think the defense minister has come out to say that that won't be happening between May 1st and May 3rd. And even when it does, it's not a straightforward story. There's still going to be a lot of caveats in there. And there's an app. It's called Gerak Malaysia. That's how you do your application. You either use the app or you go to the nearest police station to get that done. So that's a lot of movement interstate. But speaking of states, I've got the senior Harian in front of me. And the headline they're going with is Lapan Negeri Bebas Case COVID-19. Baru tetapi PKP diteruskan. Basically, 8 states free of COVID-19 at this point, but overall the MCO is still going on. These states include Perlis, Kedah, Kelantan, Terengganu, Pahang, Perak, Labuan and Sabah. So I guess this also brings up the question of exit strategies, right? I think overall we're in week six of the MCO. I've lost count of days at this point, but the question is how do we move forward from here? The lockdown is simply a temporary measure, right? It's
absolutely
not a cure for the situation.
Absolutely. Some grouses among the masses that the government hasn't been as forthright as other countries have been in terms of guidelines or reference points or frameworks for an exit strategy, or why even MCO has been extended. A lot of my friends in Penang are chafing a bit in terms of more details or the lack of details from the government.
I think some form of exit strategy is sort of taking place, but I think what businesses want is some certainty. If we hit this signpost, what would be the exit strategy? You hit this higher milestone, okay, then what businesses will be allowed to operate? And I think right now it seems rather ad hoc. It's like, okay, let's let the council meet and then we decide, and then, you know, there is no long-term roadmap here.
Yeah, and businesses can't plan.
Yes, it's about certainty.
Yeah, Chuang, speaking of Penang, that's the front page of the Star.
Right? Hooray!
Two pictures of a river in Georgetown, and 7 weeks apart. Before MCO, it's black, and after MCO, or at least 7 weeks forward, it is jade green. I think this illustrating the bigger point of the lack of human intervention in the running of day-to-day activities has led to a lot of that's just, for the lack of a better word, prosperity for the environment.
Well, if there's any silver lining to the COVID-19 playbook, it is the fact that the environment is given a chance to heal itself. It's been, what, 2 and a bit months now, give or take, and I've been hearing reports that the turtles coming onto the beach, that they lay their eggs in even the northern Penang state where the nature park is, the reserve. And it's fantastic, right? I mean, Thailand is saying that tourism is going to halve, right, at least. And their islands are getting some kind of resuscitation. So at least there's some kind of positivity there. Riding in my motorbike in the city yesterday, it was fantastic.
Yeah, and so why are you in the city?
I was buying groceries.
In the city?
Mid-Valley. Yeah.
That's the city. Yeah, okay.
That's where the city lies.
And I think the question here is whether we, not just Malaysians, but everyone can learn from this and maybe learn to live a little bit more in harmony. Because essentially the blackness from that that river there was due to people dumping oil and all of that into the River. And now we're going into a few messages. And when we come back, we'll be talking about international news, including Facebook launching a rival to Zoom and Singapore being the most infected after China and India. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanesan with Noel Lim and Kusu Chuang in the studio this morning. And we're running a toll on Twitter. Sorry.
Are you collecting money?
Yes. We're running a toll on Twitter this morning. No, we're running a poll on Twitter this morning. Will you buy property in the foreseeable future? Tell us why. Right now, we've got about 76 votes. Yes, 22%. Only for deals, also 22%. No, with 25%. And no worry about the future at 30%. Noel Chuang, any thoughts here? Would you buy property in the foreseeable future?
Yeah, if it's on a fire sale.
Fire sale.
Because as a certified total Chinaman from Penang, which is a double whammy, only there's deals left. So, and you would imagine, right, there would be tons of deals now because obviously it's a buyer's market.
Sorry,
right?
Hold on. Can we go back to you're a totally certifiable Chinaman from Penang?
China Pat from Penang. La.
Okay, so that's an official thing.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, great. Yeah.
Self-confessed.
So yes, I think a lot of people are going to be looking at that, those with access to capital and taking advantage of the possible cut, further cut in rates as everyone tries to deal with this. I am still on the fence about whether to buy property at all. But right now, let's talk about tourism in Thailand. According to Tourism Authority of Thailand, visitor numbers are set to fall by 60% this year to 16 million. However, it cautions that the numbers could go even lower as people are cautious about a second wave of infections. The agency also says that this trend is not likely to be reversed until a vaccine is found. I think this is something that we've talked about before, right? Essentially, people are going to be worried until there's a concrete cure to this.
Yes, I think it's quite natural it's a human instinct, right? After all, when we put in a lockdown for a certain period of time, we're a bit wary, especially when there are good news. I think in the case of Malaysia, we have 35 new cases on Friday as reported or yesterday. So I think I'm still thinking like, is there some hidden cluster somewhere, right? Anyway, back to Thailand. The Thai economy relies heavily on the tourism industry. As we know that, some estimates suggest that the industry contributes nearly 20% to Thailand's economy, and the IMF has downgraded the economic forecast for Thailand in 2020, like all countries, to a contraction of 6.7%, making it the worst performer among its ASEAN peers.
That's right. Obviously, having referred to it earlier, and the environmental degradation, I mean, you know, Koh Samui, Koh Phi Phi, Koh Lanta, obviously Phuket, you know, all these southern Thailand bastions of sun, sea, sand, right? Gold given a chance to recover. So, even the tourism minister that are talking about some kind of positive benefit from the COVID-19 have to, like, no choice, right?
Yeah, so we've run a few polls on Twitter, actually, in the past. So on April 16th, we ran a when will you travel again? And 42% or just under 42% saying they're not even sure about that. 18% saying only for traveling within the country. 26% say when I get vaccinated, and 15% indicate when the infections drop a lot. So again, they're illustrating that there is a discrepancy there, and that essentially people aren't sure. There's no playbook here for something like this in this era. If we take a look at our neighbor down south, after India and China, Singapore is now the Asian country with the highest number of COVID-19 cases. Our neighbor down south reported 931 cases yesterday, which brings the total to about 13,000, overtaking Japan. However, its death toll remains at 12.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, Noel, but I was just going to point out, of the new cases, only 15 have come from nationals and PRs. The overwhelming majority has come from the migrant workers.
I guess the good news is that they know where the big cluster is, and they can take precautionary measures. I think they have already made some alternative accommodation arrangements for these workers. But I think the Singapore government, last week, they did say that they will need to tighten some movement, because even though 15 is a small number for the locals, but they suspect there may be some reservoir of a hidden cluster. I think that was the exact phrase that Lee Hsien Loong had used.
Which then makes Malaysia's number seem almost disingenuous, right? Because in Singapore, I think migrant workers comprise about 300,000 people, and obviously they would be completely documented, right? In Malaysia, we've got some way north of that. I think 2 million documented, another 2 million undocumented. So that means about 4 million, give or take, right? Richard Riot years ago said we had about 6 in total. So if we don't have as many numbers from clusters, and we know migrant workers live in clusters, right, because of budgetary necessity, them, what does it mean for our numbers? Do you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, I think this illustrates the importance of not letting your guard down when it comes to, like, one outbreak in a concentrated area can really, like, look at what happened to Singapore. I think for the most part, they thought they had it under control. And then suddenly, out of the blue, we've got thousands of cases breaking out there. And as we've just pointed out, that from a particular sector, a cluster, of course, there's also a testing bias here because it's all in one area. But I think I read in the Edge Weekly something about, you know, for a lot of our migrant worker populations are in the construction industry and they're all fragmented aside, right? So one construction site houses these people. And as long as there are no breakouts there yet, then it's okay. As well as Singapore, it's all very concentrated in just the dorms.
Yeah, so I think in Singapore, there is, I think their reputation took a hit, right? Like, you know, there was biasness. And if they had, you know, looked at the plight of migrant workers much earlier, this wouldn't be a problem. But there is an article, there was a contribution by Simon Tay from SIIA, one quite a respectable think tank in Singapore. It's an article that he wrote for Council on Foreign Relations. And it actually lays out Singapore's plan on how they dealt with this and the different phases in the plan. And, like, you know, if something happens, this is what they did. And I thought it was quite a brilliant article because it really just, you know, lays out how Singapore was quite strategic in combating this COVID-19 until this unfortunate incident happened. But I think now Singapore is recovering and they're trying to make amends.
And speaking about recovery, let's look at monetary policy. Central banks around the world remain under pressure to support their economies through the COVID-19-induced recession. As such, the US Federal Reserve, the Bank of Japan and the European Central Bank will hold meetings this week. And among the options they have to support the economy are extending the quantitative easing, helping ease credit to trouble to businesses and committing to rock bottom rates for longer. And obviously, these are some of the things that we're not unfamiliar with. We've seen this happen before.
So the Fed has already previously cut rates to virtually zero and rolled out a series of emergency lending facilities. And according to a Bloomberg survey of economists, most have limited expectations, though, for any substantial changes at this week's meeting when the Fed meets. Because I think there's a lot being done already and maybe they need to just have a wait and see period to see how the stimulus package take effect.
Okay, well, over in Europe, the ECB has failed to agree on how to structure a recovery fund. That's even after President Christine Lagarde warned that the region could shrink as much as 15% this year. In the Bank of Japan. In Japan, the Bank of Japan will discuss allowing unlimited government bond purchases, replacing the current 80 trillion yen target. Just in one reflection, I mean, I think only the most liquid and the safest countries or regions with the most firepower are allowed to borrow and print as much money as they can. Some of the most financially distressed countries can't. And where does Malaysia sit? Somewhere in the middle, right? We can't print our way out of trouble because we get in trouble with the ratings agencies.
Yeah, but at least that's one option for countries like Italy and Spain.
Yeah.
That's not an option at all because they are part of the euro, right? But you know, we've talked a lot about people in trouble and the distress that some economies are facing and in sectors. But one sector that has not really been bothered by this, or in fact has boomed because of this, is video conferencing, right? And obviously, we've seen Zoom stock, I think last week it touched $170 before settling back at $154. I've totally not been watching this stock or anything
sure
like that.
I'm sure you haven't.
$170.
Now, Facebook looks like they want to get in the game, capitalizing on people stuck indoors, and have introduced a new group video chat called Messenger Rooms. Basically, an alternative, or at least from my reading, a consumer alternative to Zoom. Zoom is supposedly for businesses, right, and enterprises. So this could be a way for them to capitalize on the consumer market. But it's called Messenger Rooms.
Very imaginative.
It even sounds like Zoom. So the question is Facebook about to pull another Instagram Stories on Snapchat? I think this will be interesting to play and see.
So the question is, will Room doom Zoom?
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Amazing.
Thanks, Diana.
Okay. So, yes, basically, the Facebook Messenger Rooms is a feature that will be made available on Facebook's core social network and its Messenger app, and allows about 50 people, a chat room of about 50 people, and won't require participants to have Facebook accounts, but you can't just send the link to random people, I think. And chats will be free with no limited time, whereas Zoom Basic at this point has a 40-minute limit if you are more than a conversation of more than two people.
Yeah, most of the time they just give you the unlimited thing, you know.
Yeah. So you know, when I look at Facebook, you were saying that maybe they're targeting the consumer market, right? Which seems to make sense because Facebook's like a friendly social media, unlike LinkedIn, which is more corporate-y. Right?
Correct, correct.
So, but Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg said that the existing products were primarily focused on enterprises, and so he wanted to do more for the consumer space. But he also said the company wouldn't be watching or listening to your calls.
I like that he has to say this.
Yeah, and there's no ability for users to record video chats as well.
I've only got one reply for Mark Zuck. Cambridge Analytica. Okay, mate, you went to Congress, you apologized. Nobody believes you, okay? Nobody.
Well, I mean, the fact that the company has to say it out loud, I think will hamper its ability to grow here. Because whatever said and done, I mean, Facebook launched a really good product a few years ago called Facebook Portals, right?
Oh, yeah, they did.
Which was basically a tablet that you put on your kitchen. It has a camera and it follows you as you talk. No one bought it because it was made by Facebook. I bet you if Microsoft or Apple had made that, it would have sold. Because end of the day, there's an implied trust with those product makers as opposed to Facebook, which has been, well, Chuang, they got called to Congress. That says a lot already.
Exactly, right? I mean, if you've got to come out and say it publicly, then, you know, obviously something's got to smell of rotten fish.
Yes, I think after this lockdown, I think the attention will go back again to some of these social media platforms. Maybe even governments may want to break them up.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a fight. And just to say how big of a fight, actually, Zoom clocked in 300 million users last week. That was up from the 200 million that we saw before that, and up from 10 million, which was the max last year. Right now, we're going into a few messages. And when we come back, the Higher Education Breakfast Grill, where Lin Ma will be speaking to Professor Sarom Nain of Gerak and Professor Pradeep Nair of Taylor's University. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.